My name is Noel Bell, and today I'm chatting with Father Joe Pereira. Father Joe is the founder and managing trustee of the Kripa Foundation in India. Set up in 1981, it is one of the largest NGOs devoted to the care, support and rehabilitation of those affected by chemical dependency, HIV and AIDS. Meditation and yoga are the holistic components of Kripa care. A lifelong practitioner of yoga himself, Father Joe uses specifically designed yoga practices as developed by BKS Iyengar. He works closely with Indian governmental departments as well as the Catholic Church in drug abuse care and social services. He travels worldwide giving seminars and retreats on addiction and recovery. Well, I caught up with Father Joe, not in some far-flung cozy part of the world like Calcutta or Los Angeles, but in Victoria in London at the World Centre for Christian Meditation Conference, Meditation and Addiction, The Way Through. I started off by asking Father Joe how he got to found the Kripa Foundation.
I got to found this because I was inspired by Mother Teresa. And I was simultaneously disillusioned by my clerical life. You know, I was ordained in 1967, and the aftermath of the Vatican II hit all of us, and six of my companion priests left. Two committed suicide, and I was on the verge of quitting. And then I came to know Mother Teresa very closely in 1971, and she inspired me that the best way to do any kind of reforms in the church is not to quit, but to stay in and make a contribution from within. Interestingly, I found my vocation within a vocation. I found myself getting very attracted towards people who are helpless because of alcoholism and drug abuse. And that's how it all started. And when I became a pastor, parish priest, I asked for permission to start Kripa Foundation.
I made reference to the singing priest. Why are you known as the singing priest?
Well, I happened to have a good voice when I was ordained a priest. And I used to do, even in my student days, I used to conduct the choirs. And I was also conducting the choir in the cathedral, which was a very big event at Christmas with the big orchestra, the Bombay Chamber Orchestra and all that. I used to do a lot of spots. I used to also give my voice for a lot of advertisements, radio advertisements and all that. So people knew me as a singing priest. And then I put up several musicals, even Broadway musicals like Annie and Evita and all that. So that was my kind of a nickname. And as a young priest, I was a very party-oriented priest. I used to be taking my guitar and going and singing and having youngsters come around for a sing-song.
Right, so is that the ingredient for staying looking so young? You make no secret of the fact, I'm not giving away state secrets here, that you're 70.
Yeah, I am 70, but I feel as young as, let's say, 40, but that's because of my yoga. It is yoga that really kept me in good shape, because we are constantly working on the spine. And spine has two benefits: mental health, optimum mental health, and slowing down the aging process. But it's rigorous yoga. Iyengar, my guru, I've been with him for 44 years, 45 years a priest, and 44 years of daily practice with Iyengar type of yoga. And it has, not that I have not had mid-age crisis, I have had five different midlife crises, like, you know, initial blood pressure, wiped it off with yoga, heart problem. I was born with a heart defect, wiped it out with yoga. I had a major accident and was recommended a surgery for my back. I did not go through it, went through the protocols and got rid of it completely. Then prostate gland swelling and potential threat of malignancy, got it all cleared up now. Macular degeneration, completely gone. Something which baffles medical science. But that is a combination of science and faith, yoga, and a lot of meditation and centering.
Now, what the listeners won't have had access to, unless we post the link to some YouTube link, is what I've just seen, which is a 70-year-old man flexibly do what he does with the yoga and the chair. And how is that just true practice? You get that level of flexibility with your body.
Yeah, I could not do many of these kind of postures when I was 26 years old, but today at 70 I can do that. I couldn't sit cross legs at the age of 26. I couldn't get my legs in cross legs. Today I do comfortably cross legs meditation for 30 minutes in cross legs. That is the lotus pose, which is the most difficult pose. I do a back bend. In Milwaukee recently, I asked some of the students were state basketball champions. I said, do you think you have good stamina? They said, yeah. I said, can you stay with me in this, you know, what is known as the reversed bow pose, Urdhva Dhanurasana? They couldn't stay for more than 3 minutes. I went to stay for 7 minutes. And this is absolutely baffling. But, you know, it's not just the physical power. It is a lot to do with the combination of the nervine energy. In yoga, you get this nervine energy, which does good to you both as for the aging process being slowed down, but your mind remains very fresh and alert.
And what level of consciousness would you say you're in?
See, the consciousness that you get at the end of these kind of practices. This morning I got up early morning at 5 o'clock and did 1.5 hour practice because I had to prepare my state of my neurological state in an optimum condition of, you know, there is a, I can't describe in words what changes within me when I have gone through that protocol, because it's a absolutely back-breaking protocol. And when I have gone through that, at the end of it all, I just for the fun of it today, I took my blood pressure. It was like 120 upon 75. I mean, it's optimum blood pressure, you know. So, and after doing all those involved things. But apart from that, I was feeling a kind of a sense of inner equilibrium. No nervousness. You see, I wiped out that nervousness. Coming all the way here to present this could have created a little bit of a awareness that I'm doing something big, you know. But it did not affect me at all. I just went through it without. And that was as a result, I say, of preparing myself neurologically to handle the so-called, people call it stress. For me, it's no stress. It was fun. Today, the whole program was fun. Well, I'm not tired.
You look like a natural up there doing it.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to travel for about another 9 hours by plane tomorrow morning. And tomorrow night, I'll be landing there. Next early morning, I have a program. And I'll be fit as ever. No, I don't understand what is jet lag. I travel for 30 hours sometimes, nonstop. I get off the plane sometimes at 3 o'clock in the morning. At 8:30, I'm saying mass. And at 9:30, I'm conducting a 3-hour yoga workshop. That's the kind of energy God has given me. I thank God, because this is a gift. And I think it's a combination of a lot of discipline, a lot of centeredness, and no distraction, no dissipation. You know, dissipation plays a big role in our weakening ourselves, you know. So when you're focused, absolutely no nonsense, nothing comes in my way to sort of just keep my mind clear, pure. Purity is lots to do.
The most profound part of the day for me was the exercise with the raised legs and the calves over the chair. And yeah. I found myself breathing much better.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, you, who were guiding us through it, said to get, I'm paraphrasing here, that in order to get truly free, you have to be willing to let go of everyone and everything.
Yes. And some people broke down in the crowd because they couldn't take the formula that I was offering them. It's a formula by Anthony.
Is that really scary to some, though?
It's a scary formula, but if you have really relaxed your body and relaxed your breath, those are symbols of your preparedness and of your capacity to let go, to forgive, and to be dispossessed. We cling to many things that are not necessary, including even sometimes very personal things like good name and even health. So when I do these kind of programs in terminal cancer people or homes for the aged, I try to bring them to celebrate life at any point in time. You know, Cardinal Newman said, fear not that you're going to die, but rather fear that when the moment of your death comes, you wake up to the reality that you have never lived. See, this whole process is, if you're living involved in life. You know, Mother Teresa would put it as triple joy. The joy of living has to be reflected in the joy of loving. And combined, the joy of living and loving has to be seen in the joy of serving. Mm. And her formula was caring, which is kara in Greek, means to suffer with. Now, all this is, as Viktor Frankl would say, fills me with meaning, fills me with purpose. And I think as long as you are living for a purpose, you never tire. Physically, you may get tired, and we make a fetish of rest. Basically, we don't need more than 4 hours of sleep. An additional 1 hour, 5 hours would be just nice. But it should be like, you know, when I hit my head to the pillow, off. Within a minute, I'm off. And when I wake up with the alarm, I'm fresh as ever. So if it is 5 hours, 5 and a half maximum, I'm ready for the next day. And wherever in the world, I immediately put myself in the clock, in the timing of the time zone that I am in.
You mentioned Viktor Frankl, and I'm minded of the suffering from the Holocaust and from world wars, and I put this to Father Lawrence earlier as well, and the suffering in India and Africa. If there was so much suffering, and we're asking in our STEP program to ask for divine intervention, if the cynic said, where was God when so many perished, and that so many are perishing, as a man of faith, what would you say to someone who is looking for evidence of the presence of God?
It all depends on the formula that we choose to understand the equation between good and evil. It all depends on that. The formula that I feel happy about is that basically we were gifted with that gift of freedom. And rather than being robots like animals, and being directed, you know, without any use of my free will. By my free will, I also took the responsibility for my life. As the so-called spirits revolted against, man also fell victim to this wanting to be in control. And that's the basic struggle, that as long as we are not acknowledging our status as human, which is not God, there will always be disproportionate repercussions of that which is full of evil. And a man like Hitler was the extreme example of complete domination of his self-will and his ego. Also, the kind of life he came from, you know. And innocent suffering challenges my faith also. When I see babies suffering, that challenges my faith, you know. And for that, I just kind of acknowledge that, who knows, this is kind of a vicarious suffering which can bring good to people somewhere in the world, you know. And the ultimate answer in the Christian thinking is, well, you can't get a satisfactory answer except the answer that God gives, I didn't spare my son. And I have given you that script, that if you choose to save your life, you lose it. If you are ready to offer your life in sacrifice, you'd keep it. When Mahatma Gandhi was shot, I was depressed. I mean, Martin Luther King also. I mean, these are moments of depression. When somebody has, I mean, at the peak of this achievement of freedom, we get a bloodbath from Pakistan and India. You can't understand these events. Who's creating them? Do you put that blame on a so-called God, or do you put that blame on a co-creator, that is man? And it's a mystery of evil, which also gives me a kind of a sense of helplessness, and yet I believe in reversing this, and that's where I I feel that instead of cursing this darkness, can I light that little candle?
Yes.
Can I make a difference?
Yeah.
Holding. And I have experienced miracles. I have experienced impossible things being possible with the power of prayer, with the power of this kind of, collective kind of consciousness. So I believe in miracles. I believe that the struggle between good and evil will always go on, and there will be always victory of good over evil.
Now, in counselling and psychotherapy, of which I'm in training, I'd always say to a client, there's no magic wand.
Yep.
But listening to you in this conference, it sounded like you had a magic wand.
Yes and no. The magic wand is to learn the configuration. In Indian philosophy, there is such a thing as a Rita Dharma. That means the whole world is configured. If you know how, in computer language, to configure your role as an individual, as a family person, as a professional, to configure these three dimensions into the final dharma of Rita Dharma, where you play a very specific role in the universe. Mother Teresa said, I am a drop in the ocean, but the ocean would be poorer if that drop was missing. See, the sense of self-worth. So, yes, there is a magic wand. There is a sure path to, just making it. Okay? Mm-hmm. But with one formula, God makes it happen. If you let it happen. So even there, that magic wand implies a certain amount of understanding the process and learning the process. And that process is death. It contains self-denial. And it contains taking up your cross, which is painful. The reality of everyday life.
Yeah. Now, for anyone listening, Father Joe, who may have tried meditation and they just didn't have the fidelity of the practice and they got distracted, how would you encourage someone listening to try again? And for those who have just tried, to keep going?
Well, I tried and gave up, so it's a common phenomenon. We always try to see that, well, let's give a serious effort, and we fail. It's not how many times I fail. The same thing with addiction. It's a relapse-prone ailment. It's not how many times I relapse, but having relapsed or having failed, can I take responsibility for this and said, I goofed it up? It's not the practice that is bad. I goofed it up. When Lee Kuan Yew, the Prime Minister mentor, he was meditating for 14 years, according to New York interview that he gave in the New York Times after his wife died. And then he said he found his finance minister meditating this way. And he learned this form of John Maynes type of... And he acknowledged that it's different for him. So his 14 years of so-called practice was not giving him that kind of sense of connectivity with the self.
Yeah.
So that's the crux of the whole thing.
You're on your way to catch a flight very soon, but one thing you started with your earlier presentation, you said, taking the think slogan.
Yes.
And I quite like, don't think, shut up. Would you care to elaborate what that means?
Yeah, that means that we take our thoughts too seriously. Our ego has two dimensions. The kind of things, the kind of thoughts we carry. Our perceptions are warped. But yet we are self-righteous about our warped perceptions. So all our so-called prejudices are irrelevant to the coming to the knowledge of the real truth. Secondly, our will is also running riot. So both our prejudices and our wills, controlled by the ego, have to be silenced. Now, even if you distance yourself from whatever you are thinking self-righteously, and then look at what you were self-righteous about, you will come to realize how stupid it was. Mm-hmm. So that flexibility of, expanded consciousness gives that flexibility to let go what you were clinging to. essentially meditation amplifies your embrace, consciousness embrace. It widens. That is why the Sanskrit term, the end of meditation, is to be sthita prajna. You have to be still and embrace all the opposites. You get praise, you take it well. You get insults, you take it equally well. It bounces off your so-called, you know, presence.
Yes. Father Joe, thank you very much for speaking to me.
Welcome. I'm honored.
Good luck on your trip home.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to an interview with Father Joe Pereira, founder and managing trustee of the Kripa Foundation in India. For more podcasts, visit noelbell.net/podcasts.